everybody, and welcome to this Subject Expert Matter interview with CBM Connect. Today, we're going to be sitting down and talking to Peter Eitner, Senior Application Engineers with Wilcoxon Sensing Technologies. And today's interview is all about cable predictions for permanently installed accelerometers.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Kim.
Well, good. Thank you.
Yeah, so today we did want to talk a little bit about cable protections for sensors, because selecting the right cable for permanently installed accelerometers is critical to ensuring the integrity, really, of your vibration sensor data. It's also important to protect the cable for long service life, which is often going to come in harsh environments. So everyone worries about replacing a failed sensor, but it can be equally time-consuming and costly to replace a failed cable. So carefully considering the industrial environment when purchasing that sensor and cable will go a long way towards preventing both signal corruption and cable failures.
Yes, and you mentioned that the environment can affect the sensor data. What causes that, and how is the data affected?
Yeah, so many industrial environments have electromagnetic interference, also known as EMI, or radio frequency interference, also known as RFI. And even when those are not present at the sensor installation site, they can still be found along the cable run. So to prevent them from corrupting the signal being transmitted by the cable, shielding is the most common method of protection used. And there's generally two types of protection. The first is foil shielding. This is made of aluminized mylar with a drain wire for electrical connection. So the foil blocks high levels of RF signal, which are often found in wind turbine nacelles or high-speed turbines. It also helps prevent erroneous signals, and you can kind of think amplitude spikes or activity when there is little to no vibration. And those things can occur from nearby walkie-talkies, although they can still manifest depending on the operating frequencies. The second shielding method is braided shielding, and this is provided by a braid made from many strands of small gauge wire wrapped around the conductors of a cable. This uses the same principle as a tin-plated copper conductor itself, and it's actually considered more effective at minimizing power line frequencies often found around electric motors. So this would help eliminate your power line frequencies that show up usually at 50 or 60 hertz, as well as protecting against generic induced noise, such as that which would come from a nearby VFD or a generator. Tightly wound braided shield also protects against RF interference, but it's used as a conductor for grounding purposes, rather than a foil shield, which has that separate drain wire. So you just need to be aware of the difference between those two.
Thank you. Now that does seem to cover the electrical issues. What is the best way to protect against physical cable damage?
Yeah, it's not entire. Shielding won't completely eliminate all of your electrical influences. So there are some other grounding techniques and connector differentiations that might come into play with a particularly troublesome noise issue. So those are things that you can evaluate if you're still experiencing those problems. But as for physical protection, there's two typical approaches. The first is going to be a stainless steel overbraid, which is actually the same idea as a braided shield, except now it's wrapped around the outside of your cable. So a stainless steel overbraid protects the cable from sharp objects and can act as an additional signal shield, although it is typically electrically isolated and therefore of little to no value for noise or interference protection. For underwater applications, though, like monitoring a submersible pump, the braid protects the outer insulation from foreign objects and doesn't trap water. So this is the more flexible form of protection when damage is not really expected to occur to the cable. The second approach would be via armor, which is essentially a metal conduit that the cable is fed through. The spiral armor jacket protects the cable from heavy objects, such as those found in a hot roll steel mill or sharp objects that would cut through a braided shield. and it provides chemical resistance due to the cable being completely isolated from the atmosphere. Armor is a more expensive and rugged approach to cable protection when damage would likely occur if no armor were present.
Those protection methods seem like they protect against most damage. Now, what about environmental considerations?
Yeah, they certainly would protect against the worst that you'd really expect a cable to be subjected to, but they obviously add cost to the cable assembly and aren't always selected, even in applications where they'd be useful. So environmental considerations will come into play there if you don't have that shielding or protection method in use. So some of those environmental considerations that you need to take into account include temperature, chemicals, fire or sunlight exposure, and even waterproofing. So for any applications where those things need to be considered, using a Teflon jacketed cable is usually a safe selection. Teflon can withstand temperatures up to 260 degrees Celsius, which is about 500 degrees Fahrenheit, which makes it ideal for high temperature applications and environments like pulp and paper mills. It also offers excellent chemical resistance and is generally rated for outdoor use with UV exposure, as well as being used in many cables that are plenum rated. And that's a type of rating that relates to heat tolerance where cables are run long distances alongside each other. So overall, the stiffness of the Teflon cable is really the only main negative that it has. If you do need a more flexible cable option, you'd want to use something like PVC or Santoprene, both of which offer good chemical resistance still and relatively standard temperature ranges for cables, which means up to about 125 degrees Celsius or 257 Fahrenheit. Tefzel is another option when weighing chemical resistance, and it's also rated for use in areas where radiation is present. So that's obviously a must for any nuclear facility. Finally, also, one low-cost offering that checks a lot of boxes is polyurethane. This is a low-cost, waterproof material with really good abrasion resistance. It has good enough chemical resistance and a good enough temperature rating for most indoor applications. And it's often selected when data transmission is key, but the environment is forgiving. Polyurethane is often used in underwater applications because it can be bonded to metals, so it can create that watertight seal to the sensor. And it also has excellent, what they call hydrolytic stability, which I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about, but essentially it means that it can withstand the liquid or the temperature that it's being submerged in without losing its solid shape, which would ultimately allow water to penetrate that cable. So all of those are considerations to make in terms of the environment and a few suitable cable jacket selections.
Well, Peter, thank you so much for going over everything and giving everybody some good ideas and best practices to use also. And if somebody wants to reach out to you, what is the best way they could do so?
Sure. Yeah, they can reach me at my email, which is peter.eitner@wilcoxon.com. Or they can also find me on LinkedIn or reach me at either one of my phone numbers, which we can post up in the video here and can also be found on wilcoxon.com. So many different ways to reach out to me if you have any questions.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. And yes, Peter, we will go ahead and link all of your information on this video. Also, for everybody listening, check out cbmconnect.com. Peter has generously offered his time and has a lot of articles, webinars, more interviews that you can get a little more detail on and learn more about cable protections. So, Peter, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you, Kim. And thanks to CBM Connect for having us on again.
Thank you.